So, the next talk is Homo Sapiens by Julia Moritz-Chollet, Malte Larsen, and Maya Minder. And it's about their open soil research. Please give them a great round of applause and welcome them to the stage. If you have... And if you have questions during the talk from the internet, please use our channels on IRC or Mastodon or Twitter and just use the hashtag Eliza. Are you guys ready?
Totally.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for the introduction. And glad you all made it here today. And yeah, we're really excited to tell you about our project. So to get started, we want to summarize, like I would like to give an introduction, a short introduction into soil science, the definition of humus, and some major facts to get us all on the same page here. And Julian will introduce the Homo Sapiens project and what it's all about. And after that, Maya will give a short introduction of open science and art. And we actually reserved 30 minutes of our time for an open discussion at the end, because we think it's mostly very fruitful to have discussions rather than having a monologue on you. So we're really looking forward to that. And first thing, humus. So what comes in mind? It's probably that. And I can assure you it's really delicious. But we want to talk today about the soil, the humus soil. And therefore, we want to give you a definition of what soil actually is. And there are a lot of definitions. Historically, the science about soil arose from different perspectives, from scientific research, from ecological perspectives, to agricultural perspectives. And the perspective is, really matters if you define something. So you can see it as a productive system for your agriculture efficiency, but you can also see it as a four-dimensional natural entity that actually is made of sand, silk, and clay, also a base layer of rock, and a soil actually develops over time by climate influences, direct or indirect, and another content of soil is humus, and this is what we want to talk about today. And humus essentially is the dark layer that you see on the top, which is actually made of organic matter. And this organic matter, this humus part, is also found in deeper layers of the soil. So there's always a mobilization of humus by water, for example, in deeper soil levels. And the humus is super important for the soil because it contains the major part of carbon and nitrogen, which is essential for plant nutrition. And it holds a very complex and diverse multitude of species, fungi, bacteria, protozoa, arthropods. There are countless of individuals per square centimeter, and it's massively influenced by climate factors. So, to give you a short introduction about the complexity, I oversimplified with a little sketch. I made it on my phone this morning. to give you a short introduction of the soil food web, it's actually, you can consider it as a bioreactor. It's a very complicated system. And to just give you an idea, the first stage, the first level of the soil food web is the photosynthesis. You can say it's the input parameter. So we have organic waste from bacterial residues. We have plant that give residues from the roots, but also plant matter like litter from the top. And all this is processed on the second level by the decomposers. And the decomposers are fungi, essentially bacteria. And the third level, they feed on those decomposers. Those are the shredders, grazers, or also pathogens. This is a protozoa, or amoeba in German.
Amoeba.
Yeah. And the level four are predators. So the organisms, they grow larger, and then we come to a level where we have a lot of predators. They feed off the smaller organisms. And those are nematodes and arthropods. And on the next level, we have, for example, larger animals like birds or, different kinds of mice. Yeah.
Moles,
yeah. So one important thing to mention is that trees act as a nutrient pump or base pump, you can also say in science. So if you have a soil, you always have the release and the binding of carbon and nitrogen and this fixation and this mobilization that occurs is very important to understand that if you have water, like the rain is coming and it flows down those nutrients that are released. So it's very important to have vegetation because the deep rooting vegetation is actually sucking up those nutrients and bringing it up to the tree, and every autumn it's falling down as leaves, for example. And those leaves accumulate in the soil top layer and will become humus. And this is very important to understand when we think about climate change and rising temperatures. The microbial activity will increase, and this leads to more greenhouse gas releases. And to show you why this could be a problem already now with the rising temperatures, it's important to understand that the carbon stock distribution is, if you look at the latitude of our planet, on the southern hemisphere, the equator, this is where we are based right now, and the northern hemisphere, you can see that the accumulation of carbon stocks in the deeper soil levels, so we are here at 150 centimeters, increasing the further you come to the north of the planet. And this is due to the fact that it's colder. So the microbial activity is slower, so the accumulation of carbon is increased. And even though that the vegetation stock is relatively low in comparison to the equator, the carbon stocks are really high. So if we speak about global temperature rise, we have to keep in mind that we will have an increase in microbial activity prospectively. And you can also see there's also the greatest amount of soil microbial mass in the northern hemisphere. So, another drawing from my phone. super important to mention as well is that vegetation covers from sunlight, it covers from wind erosion, and also from water erosion. So if we want to preserve the fertility of a soil, the healthy soil, if we want to build up humus, it's very important to protect the soil. And there's a natural system that evolved over millions of years, and it doesn't need any maintenance and is actually sequestering that carbon for us. It's called a forest. And it's actually hosting all those microorganisms in all the varieties they have. And if we protect the systems that we have and we increase the number, we can actually sequester quite a huge amount of carbon. So there's quite a lot of studies about that topic, and I just read this morning that we could sequester roughly about 20% of the carbon emissions from the last 20 years if we plant 1.7 billion trees. And it's a rather cheap option to sequester all those carbon emissions. And our problem nowadays is that there's not enough drive, not enough force. And we have to deal with really inappropriate land management practices worldwide. And there is a tremendous amount of work we have to do. And this is the reason I will hand over the presentation to Julia now, and why we started with the project. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Malte. You can all hear me. So, yeah, it's my honor to introduce a bit about the project itself. Main questions, who, where, and what, and also how did it all start? Here I would like to tell you a bit about the Klöntal Biohack Retreat in 2017. I see some people in the audience who have been there. And it was organized by wonderful Maya Minder, who will talk afterwards, after me. And Marc Dusseyer, also founder of Hacteria, who can unfortunately not be here today. At this retreat we were sitting together, and the three of us kind of developed a plan to work on soil in the future, and then we had another meeting later, and we decided to basically integrate what we were doing already, so our own networks, and throw them together to create something new and bigger. So with all those projects that people were involved, this is incomplete summary of the network, which was partly already there before the project, and partly it grew together through the last 2 years of Homo sapiens. So there are universities involved, like Lucerne and Weimar. There's also Fab Lab and hackerspaces, biohacker spaces, and art association, some communities and camps and several things all together. Then we thought there are so many people who are interested in these topics, we should try to raise some money. And we did a crowdfunding campaign. We also hacked it a bit. I can tell you more about that later. So we got a bit of money. I would like to show you the video. How can I play it? Just to give you some impression of how it looked like there in Klöntal, so the footage is from Klöntal. And so it's artists and hackers and biologists, makers, engineers, nanotechnologists, biochemists, all sorts of people coming together there, and also filmmakers, so it was nicely documented, several short movies came out of that. And so also people with their families, so kids were jumping around. And we worked with what we found there, so we did excursions in the mountains and got inspired by everything that is around. And yeah, tried to implement it in our daily work. A few interesting projects and also new collaborations came from that. And that's also the spirit that we then integrated into the retreats in Homo sapiens. So it's about diversity, interdisciplinarity, and this interdisciplinary collaboration. And mainly about long-term projects. So it's not so much about finishing something within these few days, but to think about what we want to focus on in the future and who we want to work with. And also about having a good time together, so it's definitely meeting interesting people. We integrated some images of what is going on right now. And we suggested these two projects in the crowdfunding campaign, two retreats, and actually, no, it's not working. No. Actually, we did much, much, much more. So there's a wiki which is even incomplete with all the stuff that happened within Homo sapiens in the last 2 years. And it's been in 2018 alone 3 retreats and loads of workshops. And yeah, I will shortly go through a bit of the where and what. So 3 pillars of Homo sapiens that I would like to introduce. One is the retreats, open collaborations. So you already know what it's about. We did one in Switzerland. We were sitting at the campfire a lot, which was very great. But we were also working hard and soldering stuff in the open and working on the soil respiration chamber, I will tell you later. And we were talking a lot and doing a lot of excursions. So as you see, we like to sit around in forests. And we also did that in Germany a lot recently, this autumn, in the last retreat. And yeah, we also sometimes get into cities. This was in Stuttgart Container City. In cities, we like to sit on chairs and go to the local urban garden and get some samples there. And yeah, as I said before, it's about getting together and meeting interesting people and growing the networks together. So this map of networks that I showed before, it needs to the people need to meet in real life. It's nice to collaborate online, but it's much nicer to really sit together. As you know, here on the Congress, it's the same kind of thing, only a few more people. So the retreats were usually about 15 to 30 people and focused on soil. Also, Mark went to Finland for quite a while to do some projects there. And together with Maya, they went to Indonesia. This year, I had a 3-day workshop in Lithuania, where we found this wonderful soil profile in a local park, which where you can see like the picture that Malte showed before, the humus layer, and then the human waste layer, and then the rocks. So they were quite creative. And in Slovenia, maybe some of you know PIF Camp. I was there this summer. Yeah, but let's go to the second pillar, the workshops. So it's about sharing knowledge and making science accessible, basically, also through open source instructions and just getting people again together to get their hands dirty and work with soil. And we also, again, like to do excursions and be outside. But usually those workshops are more in an urban setting because that's where the participants are. This was in Paris. It's a bit harder to find the soil there. Fab Labs sometimes, like Spaces, hosted us to do workshops there. This was in Lucerne at the Fab Lab. And this was in Berlin. And in that case, we go out with all the participants and we collect samples and we just have to bring the dirt inside, basically. To continue to work with it. And we also did children workshops, so it's again open for everyone. Even old people sometimes join the workshops. And at the end of these workshops, it's usually a big mess. Maybe this is a bit dark, but it's a table full of stuff. In this case, this was in Stuttgart, we afterwards just declared it to be an installation now. So it was open for another 2 weeks, I think, and people could watch what the mess we were leaving after after our workshops and retreat. So, and the third one is the open hardware. You are probably quite familiar with this stuff. Again, on soil research. So this is, I'm not a real hardware soldering kind of person, but I actually did assemble this soil respiration chamber. It has been developed quite a lot further. If you're interested, look at the Hacteria Wiki. It's well documented. There's stuff on GitHub, but everything is there. And it works really well. And it also works with a solar panel. If there's a lot of sun, maybe use a bigger panel next time, but it did work. And yeah, so I'm personally a biologist, so I'm actually more interested in the wetware. So what about open wetware? Maybe if you'd like to discuss about that later or outside in the tea tent or whatever, I'm very open to that. Now, I hope I kind of clarified a few questions on the project itself and would like to give over the word to Maya.
So, hi everybody, I'm Maya. I'm not a biologist, I'm not a geologist, I'm not a biochemist. I'm coming from the arts and I'm calling myself now a fermentista. So what I do, I learned it all myself, so I have this DIY approach. I would like to give you my view on soil through fermentation, which is an altered history on science as well, a science which is 10,000 years old compared to academic science, which is 150 years old. And I want to talk about like how Homo sapiens tries to open up disciplines as well to involve the people who are dealing with the soil, because we're digging into the soil and touching it to grow gardens. And there's this question, is it enough to grow your own garden? So your own garden at home in the city, your Schrebergarten, or you have a farm? And the question is it? And maybe it is. Yeah. So fermentation has been a knowledge or a cultural heritage since 10,000 years. And people started to ferment as something which is magic as well. Like yeast itself has the Greek origin word of magia. And they did not know what they do there because they couldn't see the microbes and the organisms. But within those 10,000 years, we developed something which is always regional, adapted to the climate, adapted to the soil as well, and to the nature. So fermenting means you become aware of your seasons in your country, if you have seasons or not, and you become aware about what is growing where and how it grows better, and how to preserve the food, how to make food more tasty and less toxic. So there's maybe the link to the soil as well, because soil needs to feed us, and the question is, how are we going to feed us within the next 50, 150, and 200 years? So what I wanted to say is that we maybe can also say that we've always been biohackers in that way, that we always were dealing with the microbes and the organisms, which I also like to call the invisible helpers. And through fermentation, science now has started to have this approach to talk about the holobiont. Or you can also say like the microbiome. Most of the people know about the microbiome. We carry, each one carries 2 kilograms of microorganisms inside himself. But there's also the surrounding, which is around us, which we carry around us like a halo, which we also exchange when we talk to people, and which is always connected to the environment as well. So through breathing, through eating, we are in continuous exchange with our environment. Within science, which is mainly a male-dominated sector, there has been Lynn Margulis. And Lynn Margulis, she came up with the theory of the endogenesis, so the symbiosis, and the idea of like how the eukaryotic cell, maybe some of you remember from biology interesting biological classes. You see like the microorganisms are divided by archaea, the eukarya and the bacteria. So the step from the bacteria to the eukarya, Lynn Margulis made up this theory that it was made by one bacteria eating up the other bacteria. And then instead of that, just digesting it, realizing, hey, we can also live in a symbiosis. Lynn Margulis, she marked like a change of concept in biology of the history of evolution itself. So when you go to Charles Darwin as well, Charles Darwin, he was marked by the term the survival of the fittest, and Lynn Margulis' concept is like contradicting this concept. When the survival of the fittest has been as well emblematic for a slogan of capitalism and hypercapitalism, we could now say that within the time of Anthropocene, we could now maybe change back again to the idea of the symbiosis as well. And what I also wanted to say, that Louis Pasteur, he marks also this time when we started to vaccinate ourselves. So he's the inventor of the vaccination, as well the inventor of fermentation, so zymology. And he, I always say, he was a promoter of how to hunt the germs down. So through pasteurization, there's this start of phobia against microbes, and which has now been marked in agriculture, how we try to erase just everything in the soil through fungicide, pesticide, herbicides, and try to break down this diversity, which is maybe for humans invisible, but it has always been here. And the forest, as we had before as an example, it always was self-sustaining and living for itself. So through Hacteria, what we do in our workshops, we try to make those microbes visible as well. And we try to teach those beautiful pictures bring them to the people as well, because we're still human, so we have our senses. And the visual sense is something which is very strong, like pictures talk more than 1,000 words. And so to show the people that there is much more in a drop of water on the soil makes them also become aware of this invisible force. So now again, we are in the Anthropocene, and I would maybe say, let's just skip the Anthropocene and go further. And one interesting aspect of the Anthropocene is we can use this word Anthropocene or climate change, climate warmth. But what was before the Anthropocene was the Holocene. And there's the parallelity as well. The Holocene also, it started 9,000, 10,000 years before. So with the settlement of humans, with the humans becoming farmers as well. So we just skip. Agrar industry is the biggest industry in the world, and it implies 1 billion people. So here I just wanted to show you, now small projects of people getting involved into soil or microbes, and our projects, those are mainly, and projects which have a different approach of how to bring these things back to the people. And I don't want to say like the Homo sapiens is like superior and da-da-da. What I noticed is that more and more people are starting to distribute and show this knowledge in form of our pieces and practices as well. So it's like similar like to fermentation. It started to become like a movement as well, like a global movement. Farming, urban gardens, also community gardens and community farm, and all those projects we all get involved to. Yeah. This was the circular soil chromatography by Emenia Escari. And this is a really nice technique, which is based on a technique of photography, so invented 150 years ago. So she uses silver nitrate and mixes it together with soil probes, which she dilutes in water. And this is the result we have afterwards, after the test. And what I think is the beauty in it, here it combines the art with the science as well. Because for the interpretation of those samples, you have to use the creative potential of analyzing and interpretation. And this is something which still belongs to the human, not to the machines. And so it's quite a beautiful way how pictures, again, the pictures can help to activate humans' creativity as well. This is a project I would like to introduce you because it's done by a single person in the city of Zurich. This person, Maurice Macki, he now becomes a lot of rewards for his project, but he was doing this project, Flower Guerrillon, since 30 years secretly. And just one person who was seeding the whole city, every small green quarter and square meter he found, he would seed new seeds. And within those 30 years, suddenly the city of Zurich got really stroked about the diversity of plants and flowers we have within the city. And so this shows for me, this is an example that it shows how we might or intoxicated about all the weight and heaviness of responsibility we have to take care about against global warming and stuff, but how much just one person can do with consistency and as well with time. This is another project about... Okay, yeah. So this is the last project I wanted to show you. It's from Sasha Spalac, and she works with the mycobacteria together, which is just recently scientists found out that this bacteria lives in the soil and it has healthy benefits, that it can improve your immune system and can make you happy. So
that's a wonderful finish, isn't it? So.
Okay. Cool. So we like to open
slide.
The next slide.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, guys. So we have time now for some questions. Please queue up by the microphones and we'll get to you. Thank you so much.
And if you want to stay in contact, we have a few options for you here. So the microbiomic website was done by Moritz Schulé, my brother, who's sitting over there. No WordPress, no MailChimp, nothing. You can safely sign up to the newsletter. And a wiki, forum, Twitter, just write us an email, whatever. And if you really like what we do, there's also several possibilities to support us, either through the website, through the donations, Bitcoin, Lightning, feel free. So there are some people, right?
Microphone number two, please.
Yes, first of all, I would like to make a comment. And I think it's really important also to stress that afforestation is not a very good tool for carbon capture, because what we're doing is we're moving carbon from the geogenic space to a biological space, and the biological space is labile, highly labile, as you can see with the forest fires. So I think it's really important to consider that. But I really liked your talk, nevertheless, and I would like to talk to you about maybe building a soil moisture sensor, but maybe later on.
Mm-hmm. There are several versions of soil moisture sensors documented as well. The one funniest is in the shape of a mole. You can find it on the wiki. But there are more serious applications. The mole just makes sound and blinking LEDs according to the moisture. But you can also plug it to some Arduino.
Okay, great. I'll have a look at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number three, please.
Maybe to the question or the comment.
Yeah, I think
she
had a question to me as well.
It was just a comment that we might, if you want to discuss it now, we can talk about it, but there are other people also having questions, I guess.
Yeah, maybe very short. No, you want
to? Did I understand the question correct? You said reforestation is not a good choice? Or?
It is a good choice. We should reforest, definitely, but we shouldn't view it as a carbon capture, as a good carbon capture option, because the biogenic, I don't know how to say it, Speicher, is very labile. And what we're doing is when we're burning carbon in fossil fuels, we're taking it from the soil or from actually a geogenic source and moving it to a biological storage.
What you basically say is it's a fossil carbon stock that we release into the atmosphere.
Exactly.
And by just capturing it via the biosphere, we should actually put it back into the ground. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, it's not possible, which is why afforestation is still a very good option, because there are not so many other options. Yeah. But it sometimes, in a lot of newspaper articles, it gives the impression that, oh, we can fix this, we just need to plant more trees. And that's just one part of it. It's also very real that trees are very vulnerable to storms, to climate change, to forest fires, to land use change, all these kinds of things. And what a lot of papers also don't consider is that they work with geodata, of course, but they don't sometimes consider who is already living on that land. And a lot of recommendations for afforestation go to the global south, where people actually use that land to live.
Yeah. One comment to that, the narrative is horrible because the narrative just implies that we can do business as usual and plant a few billion trees.
Yes.
And that's the problem. But I think regrowing forests makes a lot of sense, and also maybe food forests that we can actually use. But we can discuss about that later. I think it's a too big topic.
Our message would be that it's not only saving planting tree, but also create more humus. So we forgot to talk about composting. That's really bad.
Yeah, true.
We should talk more about compost. And there's this one technique of the pyrolyse oven, you know?
Terra preta.
Yes, terra preta techniques, where you burn like those things you can't put into compost, so like citrus skin and dried bread and stuff, and you pyrolyze it, make carbon out of it, and then you can put it back to the soil. I think there's always small ideas, like creative solutions, which we can use.
Yeah, but we're speaking about like large scale carbon sequestration here. And
maybe next question.
Next question. I mean, it's a super important topic. I mean, just give your input. I mean, if you're interested in it, just shout out your questions. I mean, it should be a living, full discussion, right? So I think it's a very, very important point, and we can talk a lot about that. Probably we skip it for later and just listen to the other questions, and I think the topic will arise again. And I have way more things to say about that, but let's listen to the next.
I'm just around, so we can talk about it.
Then. Sure.
Thanks a lot. Microphone number 3, please.
Yes, thank you for your talk. I found your workshops, and they looked very interesting, and you said a lot about it, but I still have no clue what actually you did. Could you get a bit more into detail what exactly you were exploring?
In the workshops or the retreats?
The workshops you did. And also the field explorations and stuff with all the sensors and
So the workshops are mainly, so what I call a workshop is usually like a 3-hour format or something like that. Sometimes it was longer, but that's around the shortest that I did. And that's more or less science communication. It's getting city people to dig in the soil and doing microscopy with it and seeing, whoa, it's full of life. Everything's going on in there.
Within these retreats, the combinations of workshops we do is always based on the participants. So it's changing. Every retreat is changing a lot, and we start with like brainstorming. We get an idea, like people introduce themselves and tell about what they have to teach to the others. And so it's this idea of unlearning and do it together as well. So
I think if you want to describe it, it's science communication.
Yeah, but what kind of research did you do? You had these field explorations with all the sensors. I still have no clue what you were looking for, actually.
So what I'm interested in is the microbial life, and I will just, while the next question is asked, put a few videos of microscopy. I'm trying to get a clue with low-tech equipment get a clue of the microbial diversity in the soil and the activity. The activity is relatively easy if you just abstract it and say it's equivalent to CO2. So then you can use the soil respiration chamber and measure the CO2, and you get a rough activity. You don't get like how much nitrogen is fixed, of course, but we can work on that in the future. And with microscopy, actually low-tech microscopy, you can get an idea about the diversity. I'm still not sure how well it works. Nowadays, if you talk with soil scientists, I did a lot of talking with soil scientists, they all say, this is old school, we all do metagenomic sequencing, that's the only thing how to do it now. Might be true, might be also like a bit too much for what we want to do, like have a simple tool for gardeners to assess the soil quality. But we might also work on metagenomic sequencing. It gets cheaper and easier accessible every day, basically. So next year, maybe we talk about that.
Yes, but it's about breaking down science, but also the approach from the other side, bringing science to low-tech approaches for people and community, also, mainly community, yeah.
I mean, we're at the brink of a fundamental change, how we do agriculture, how we do our economics. And I think we're trying to be on the forefront of that and try to deliver knowledge, try to, like, we're still in the process of evolvement. So to look, okay, what kind of solutions do we need? What kind of research do we need to do? What kind of workshops do we need to perform? It's a matter, like, it's a very organic process, I would say.
Yes, and those retreats, they're fun. You know? And so the idea of open source is everybody can make retreats. You know?
Yeah, great, thanks a lot. And we have a question from the internet, please.
Oh, the internet.
Are you aware of any open, accessible, do-it-yourself methods to detect heavy metal pollution in the soil?
Should I?
Yeah.
I know of a project in Indonesia at the Life Patch with some collaboration partners who basically work with, I don't know which species, but they grow microorganisms that are sensitive to heavy metals, and by doing a dilution basically and growing them, you can see what amount of heavy metals you have. It's not specific, like you can't say this is which kind of heavy metal is in there, but you can see that there's something very toxic in there and roughly how much if you standardize it on a, on some stock solutions where you know the concentration.
And also a small little tip, most of the projects are documented on the Hecteria Wiki, and there's also a forum which is freely accessible. It's Hecteria Forum, forumhecteria.org, and you can just ask questions inside the forum, which then links to a greater network of artists, DIY scientists, and people who are talking on this topic.
Thanks a lot. Microphone number two, please.
Hi, great. Thanks for your really, really interesting talk. I have two short questions. So the first one is, what is the microorganism which was mentioned in the last, or what is the exact name of the microorganism mentioned in the last project, which makes our immune system active and makes us happy?
Yeah, this is the Mycobacterium atzei.
Mycobacterium.
Atzei. But I can write it down for you.
Batsi or something like that.
Batsi. Yes. Or they called it golden bacteria also. Golden
bacteria. Have you heard of it before?
But you can.
No, not yet, unfortunately.
That's the thing. Mm. That's why we become happy if we do garden work.
But one thing to that, I think it's also a bit of oversimplification. Science always tries to get the one bacterium that does something nice, like that's the one you need to be healthy, and then you can buy it in the pharmacy and eat it, and then you're healthy. But I think that's not how it works.
It makes a good news headline, definitely.
Drink more kombucha, yes.
But if you eat, look at the human gut, but diversity is actually the key to stability. And therefore,
eat healthy.
A stable health, psychological health. Yeah, good health, healthy food.
And gardening, composting.
Yeah,
composting makes
your hands dirty.
Okay, thanks. And my second question is, when is the, or have you planned any retreats for the upcoming year? When and where?
Yes. The idea to be in Slovenia sometime in 2020 came up. But there's no fixed date or anything. But there's a newsletter, and we rarely send it, like every 2 months or something. But if we send it, then there's news in there.
Okay. Or
thank
again,
you.
Like you can organize one yourself, or you can invite people as well. So just get in touch.
Yeah, yeah, if you have a place, invite us.
Take a hint. Thank you. Microphone number 3, please.
Okay, I'm a supporter of the project already, and I would like to ask whether they already had experiences in a context with, for example, pollution from toxic waste. I come from Napoli, and there's an abnormal incidence of certain kinds of cancers and malformations. So my, I'm trying to develop a project, a sort of a research lab with the projects similar to this for detection of low-cost distributed detection of mutagens, for example. I don't know if you have a previous experience with this. I heard you. Probably this is a more general question of the one, or the previous one, about heavy metals.
Mm. Yeah, so far we don't have techniques, but I know like the heavy metals, how to measure them is mostly by spectrometry. And there's even people here in the audience who do, they build or they give workshops on DIY spectrometry, build your own spectrometer, which is actually, it's not so difficult. You have Arduinos and small cuvettes, and this is the first approach about detecting them. And then for sure there must be some mushrooms around which can help us.
The mushrooms would actually be then remediating the soil, so to get all the toxic stuff out. That's what the mushrooms do, don't they?
Yeah, depending on the mushroom, depending on the soil. It's, I wouldn't say it's an easy approach. Excuse me?
The mushrooms are not enough.
Well, to be honest, I don't know too much. Sorry?
The mushrooms are not enough.
He just said it's the mushrooms are not enough to get the heavy metals out of the ground.
Yes, yes. I just saw some statistic that the most use of fungicide is mainly by fruit tree plantations, so like all kinds of apples, pears, and peaches, and things, and like massively use of fungicides. And there are some people who say like that on the countryside you have less fungi than inside the city, because we are using fungicides inside the city. And makes sense.
Next question. Great. Thank you. And microphone number 2, please.
Thanks a lot. I wanted to ask a practical question. There is a small forest in Brandenburg that I wanted to, because it's a very sad forest that only has this kiefer, I don't know in English, this needle trees. And so also the soil is like only these needles and looks very sad. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask if it would be maybe a good idea to get a small soil samples from other places so that some mushrooms can grow there, or what, if you have any tips there.
In Germany what's happening right now is the so-called Waldumbau. It's a transformation of our forests back from those coniferous trees, or in that case pine trees, to a broadleaf tree forest or a mixed forest. And this is essentially the best measure you can take So by just changing the kind of vegetation you have, you don't have to bring in any compost. You don't, no, just leave nature do the work for you. So what you can do is, I mean, I don't know the site. I don't know how the stock actually looks like, but you can thin it out and plant manually. Mm-hmm. Or if you have broadleaf trees around your site, they would actually seed and germinate if they have the right conditions. But it's totally up to the stocking and the kind of trees. We can have a discussion about that later. Mm-hmm. This is actually mm-hmm. my major. This is what I studied. So you can. I also live in Brandenburg, so I know about those forests, and I know that the problem is that the soil of those needle humus is very, very acidic. So yeah, there's not much life in there. But just come to me after the discussion, and I will explain to you what you need to do.
Okay, thank you.
But as far as I understood, if you just do nothing, it will transform by itself, because our climate is not appropriate for those trees, only the mountain climate.
But he wants to experience it.
Yeah, sure, you want to accelerate it a bit.
Yeah.
There's also the example of the Lothar, Sturm, how you say Sturm?
Storm.
There was a huge storm in 2008 in Switzerland, which broke down many, many thousands of trees and big square kilometer. And by then it was a catastrophe. And now, 12 years later, they found out that those trees, which are regrowing there by nature, those are mostly like birches and trees that are much better adapted to climate warmth as well. So, like, nature is reinstoring itself. And then another direction is also that people start, or scientists, they start to imply microbes around seeds. So they provide the seeds with natural resilient self-defense as well. So this is the whole idea of biofertilizer as well, like how to bring back the microbes into the soil. And I think for land which is devastated and you have no organic living anymore, you can as well help. So vermicompost as well, that's the nicest thing you do. You just, if you have too much soil, when you do produce soil through vermicompost, you just throw it out into the street, yes?
Yeah, she's bringing in a lot of different topics now. But if you want to get into mycorrhizae and why you have to bring in spores sometimes, we can also go into that conversation. I can teach you probably something about that. The storms that she was speaking about and the vegetation that is arising after that is called PNV. It's the potential natural vegetation that is actually adapted to the site. And if you leave a conventional, it's a plantation, you can call it. So if you have a pine tree forest, it's basically a plantation of really young, same-aged trees for wood production, wood pulp production, or whatever. So it's an industrialized agricultural site, you can say. So if you leave it, it will die. Sooner or later, insects will come, storms will come, and it's just eradicating all the plants that are not naturally adapted to the site. So you can just leave it and do nothing, and everyone will complain, oh my God, the bark beetle is coming, and it just kills all the trees, but it's natural. They're not adapted. So, yeah. Next question.
Great. Thank you so much. And microphone number 3, please.
Thank you so much for the presentation and sharing this beautiful collaboration project. I come from an art science background as well, so I'm familiar with the language. However, from what I've seen with international environment policies and also our economic-driven industries, we are mostly focusing on carbon emissions and how to measure our impact on the environment through that and minimizing our industrial impact based on this, without noticing that biodiversity and soil health is more essential to planet health and our overall sustainability, whatever we like to call it. My question is more of, I would like to ask you to share your visions on, for example, science communication. How can we convey the idea to the majority of the population who are under, you mentioned anthropocentric perceptions. So we are fundamentally separating our human population from nature, and majority of the people would still found soil being dirt and would like to everything to be sterilized and cleaned in our human perceptions. These are what I'm struggling in my life, because personally I love nature. I love like swim in soils and forests and dust and everything. So I just would like to ask you to share your visions how we can share this love for nature with others. Thank you.
Some short words. So sharing the love, spreading the love is really nice that you say it like that. We also sometimes talk about social humus, building social humus within those retreats. I think the way to go is to involve your direct surrounding, your family, your friends, and so on, and start talking with them about these things. And people who really never get out of the city, just take them out of the city. Mm. I'm actually not that optimistic that we just spread this love and then everything will change and be fine. I think there's a much more fundamental problem deeply rooted in our capitalist society, and we need really a fundamental system change. And talking about reducing emissions, especially talking about reducing emissions, doesn't help. And in reference to the soil, what I usually use are just two very simple numbers. One is from the United Nations, which talks about desertification, so erosion. And it's something really insane, like 23 billion tons of soil that we lose each year due to land mismanagement praxis. It's hard to imagine this number, and I still didn't come up with a good comparison, but it's not that the soil gets less good and that we lose humus or fertility. No, it's gone. It's the ground beneath our feet is gone. It's washed into the rivers, into the oceans. That's the one thing. With the rest that is still here in our so-called developed countries, we like to build things on them. So in German, we have a nice word for that. It's called Flächenfraß, so eating up the country. And it describes the conversion from agricultural land and forest to building land. And each day in Germany, it's 61 hectares. For that, I have a comparison. So the big glass hall at the center of this place here is 2 hectares. So about every 47 minutes, this area is lost. And this goes on day and night, day and night. Cities are growing and growing and growing and growing. Infrastructure is growing. We build logistics centers everywhere. It's just quite crazy. And we need to embrace a real degrowth economy and degrowth political system whatsoever, how it might even look like. Mm.
So, I mean, 2019 has been a good year for us, at least. That I think the word of climate change is the word of 2019. So to talk if language is a virus as well, like this is communication about sharing ideas and thoughts and concepts, and with this phobia of dirt and microbes as well, like through fermentation again, you can teach the people like building up your microbiome, because babies are born sterile, is to let them play in dirt. And This basic knowledge, like you have the first 3 years to build up your microbiome, is slowly, like sedimenting in society as well. So this first experience as a child with nature as well is most important. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
May I say something? Turn off.
Yeah. Thanks. I think education, knowledge is the base to understand something and to protect it. I mean, if you know about the vulnerability of the systems that we're living in and how much we depend on them, it's obvious that we shouldn't speak about protection of nature as some, detached entity that we are not connected to, but we should actually speak about the conservation of human living conditions, or human preservation, human habitat preservation or something. Probably we relate more to it then. Because if you argue about topics like that, especially to people who are totally into that capitalistic world, they're always really detached to it. And our language is also detaching us from those biospheres, from those ecosystems, but we're not. And basically, I think there's just a big lack of knowledge, and that's the reason I'm working with Julian, because I believe in this alternative,
simplified, yeah.
Alternative, simplified, DIY hacking environment, because we can provide the knowledge from my perspective, that is very important, that probably people wouldn't have access to otherwise.
Yeah, by enjoying and sitting inside the forest on the ground and looking at whiteboards.
So. Great. Thank you so much. I think the discussion has to continue maybe outside. We don't have time for any more questions, but thank you so much. Mm-hmm. My impression is that you guys will hopefully be around to just answer something out here, maybe a bit more elaborate, but thank you so much, and please give them a great round of applause.